Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Keep those DMs coming. I've got one person that is flooding me with information. It's 100% really? Hockey with Millard and Shannon. And
you mean other than me flooding you with information?
No, it's not you, but they support you. And then for some reason, they're telling me about it.
How come they're not telling me?
I don't know. I think they enjoy telling me that I'm wrong more than they like telling you that you're right.
I enjoy you telling you you're wrong too. So that's good.
I was talking to our coach, Bruce Cassidy, today because Vegas lost last night. And it was a game that was back and forth. Vegas dominated the first. Tampa Bay was great in the second. And then it was up for grabs in the third. And I asked Bruce, do you focus on the great from last night or the challenging parts from last night going forward? And he actually had a really good approach that he leaves it sort of off to the side today. And then before the game against Anaheim tomorrow in the pre-scout, they'll weave in a little bit of both, but a little bit more positive. And surprised me.
I'll be the negative one. You got it. When you have a 4-minute power play, you got to score.
You're right. And the game was there hanging in the balance.
I know. It was right there. Here's the other thing in that situation. And if I was in the manager's meetings next week, I'd be suggesting this. When do we start telling goaltenders beyond a 2-minute minor that they have to serve their penalties?
Oh, you goofy. That is the most ridiculous thing that you've said. That is something I would bring up.
The guy on the bench is a good goalie, too. He can come in for 4 minutes. Andre Vasilevsky, high sticks a guy. Yeah. Blood. You know, serve the penalty.
Accidental high stick, but yeah, you're right.
Well, you have to be in charge of your stick.
I control, yeah. That is the goofiest thing you've said.
No, I've said goofier.
And honestly, that I'm disappointed because that should have come from my side.
No, I because every once
so
in a while,
left field. You're better than that.
I'm usually the calming influence on this show. Saying, don't be stupid. Think about it.
Here's a theory for you: that all of this wishy-washy play, herky-jerky, win three, lose three, like nobody's been able to get off to a good start outside of the Avalanche. Is a lot of it because of the Olympics and the announcements coming up and guys squeezing their sticks? I've heard it from a couple of different angles, and I'm curious whether you agree.
I think it's part of it. I certainly think that when the ripple effect of and we hear it on every broadcast now. If you're at the game, you do take notice that Doug Armstrong and Don Sweeney are in the building tonight. Well, yeah, okay. Billy Guerin and Tom Fitzgerald are here. It's almost like when you're a midget player and, a guy in a black jacket was there, you figured he was a scout. And so there's a scout in the building. So you try to act 2 inches taller than you really are. I would hope that that's not a factor for these guys. But, you know, when you look at the guys, and it's not a fair phrase, but when you look at the guys that are on the bubble, the guys that we think have a chance to be on this team, Nick Suzuki, Tom Wilson, on the Canadian team at least, Nick Suzuki, Tom Wilson, Mark Scheifele, you know, Robert Thomas. There are, you know, you have to think that they notice that too and have heard it too and want to be better. So you never know.
And there's a certain part of that roster on the four teams that participated in the Four Nations that have not participated in the Olympics before, right, and know that they won't get a chance going forward because this is their one opportunity in the cycle. And that's where the pressure, it's more the older guys who are putting pressure on themselves than.
So like a Scheifele.
Like a Scheifele. Now he's responded. He's been great. And he's put himself into his position, but there are other players who this is their, to borrow my buddy Eminem's line, this is their one shot.
Hold on. Who?
Don't get distracted.
I mean, this is 100% hockey, not 100% music. You know that, eh?
I love that song. But you know what I mean? Like that.
Yeah. Oh, no, I do. Yeah, I know.
These guys who are 28 to 32 that are in the mix for this team won't be in the mix by and large in 2030.
By the way, do you know where the Olympics are in 2030?
Yep. In Strathclair, Manitoba. It's it hasn't been released yet, but that's
France in France.
Strathclair must have just got bumped then because their arena's behind schedule.
I hope it's the right size. That's all I'm saying.
We're in France. I don't know where.
I can't remember the town, but it's in France.
Hall of Fame weekend.
Yeah. The 8 people going and being inducted to the Hall of Fame on Monday, but the events actually start over the weekend at the hall with the ring presentation, jackets being presented, then the Hall of Fame game Sunday night when the Carolina Hurricanes are in town. This is always a strange weekend for the Maple Leafs. Back-to-back Saturday, Sundays at home. So the Leafs are playing back-to-back at home. So it'll be exciting. Guys like Alec McGillin. McGillin's not going to be here for the induction on Monday. But Joe Thornton, Duncan Keith, they guys that have made an impact in the game are amongst many others going in on Monday.
You want to do your speech, however they set it up, before Joe.
Yeah.
Because Joe's speech is going to be outstanding.
But here's the deal, though. With 8 people going in, please keep it to 7 minutes.
Well, they have to, don't they? Don't they yank them off the stage?
They should, but they don't. They've been very polite over the years. Of course, when the commissioner went 22 minutes, that was a set in the stage.
That was fine.
Yeah, that was okay.
We've got Chris Knobloch coming up. Just an interesting start. Fascinating journey to the National Hockey League. Haven't had a chance to really hang out with him, probably more in junior than I have in this time in the National Hockey League with him. But he's as cool and calm a guy as possible. We got to get him to laughs today.
Well, I've been lucky enough to get to know Chris, even though we did a couple of Memorial Cups around him. But I've been lucky enough to get to know Chris the last 2 or 3 years and have always enjoyed him. But he holds things pretty close.
See if we can shake things up a little bit. Chris Knobloch, the head coach of the Edmonton Oilers, going to join us on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon.
Shoot, score, win, repeat, on the ice and online. Keep the energy going with NHL Game Zone, the ultimate hockey hub for free-to-play games, prizes, and nonstop competition. Take your best shot with games like NHL Lines, Bingo, Bracket Challenge, and more.
Challenge yourself and battle your friends and hockey fans worldwide. Play games for chances to win awesome NHL prizes. NHL Game Zone, your one-stop for hockey free-to-play gaming. Play today at nhl.com/gamezone. Terms and conditions apply.
Is this Chris's first time on 100% Hockey?
This is Chris Knobloch's first appearance on 100% Hockey.
All right. Don't be nervous, Chris.
I've heard you are just drill the most difficult questions, and I think I'm trying to be prepared.
Hold on. This demands another question. If you were nervous, how would we know?
Good point.
I'm not sure. I try and keep my cards close to myself and not show too much emotion.
Cards close. I mean, they're tucked inside your shorts, man.
are you that calm everywhere in your life? Like as a dad, as a husband, everything?
No. I get rattled. I get upset. I also know during the game, the camera's always on you at the worst times. There's a penalty, there's a goal against you. The camera is always going to be on the head coach after something bad happens. So what point is there to be yelling at an official or one of my players, whatever? So I'm pretty stoic at those moments because it's pretty calculated. I know when I'm going to be on camera.
Just as an aside, 1983... I'm walking through the Coliseum in Edmonton, and Glenn Sather starts to yell at me because he says his mom's giving him heck for every time he's on camera, he's swearing. And I said, well, Glenn, you know, just stop swearing then. He says, I know, but you're always on me when we do something. I said, well, that's part of the job.
That's what I know the broadcast. That's what they want. They want the emotion. They want... I know of when I was in the OHL, and there was a former NHL player who was a coach, and I loved pre-scouting their games just because they showed him on the bench, and his body language was comical. Like he was over the top, just rolling the eyes and throwing the head back, and it's like that's exactly why you got to step back.
You ever standing in the kitchen, you have to put the sheet up to your mouth as you talk to mama about the kids, like you don't want them to hear, like you guys are on the bench. Like those are top secret conversations that you guys are having on the bench that we can't read lips on.
Well, it's usually probably we're complaining about a player on our team. And that would look terrible if we got that out of, oh, did you see the play such and such made on that? So it's not so much about secrets. It's probably more just saving embarrassment for ourselves or maybe even one of our players.
Hey, what's it like to have 2 days between games?
Well, it would have been nice to be able to use it for some more practice time. We spent an extra day in Dallas for some team building. So we lost a day of practice. And it's nice to have a little bit of time off, but we didn't utilize as much as a coach would like.
Can you share what the team building was like?
It was their rookie party.
Oh.
Well, that is team building.
That is team building.
Yeah, it all depends on how the team's doing. If it's if the team's winning and won 10 in a row, it's a rookie party. And if the team's not winning as much as you'd like it, it's team building.
Hey, so I'm curious though. And you have a club that has lots of fathers on it, lots of families on it.
Yeah.
To extend a road trip, what kind of discussions was that? The players coming to you saying we're going to do our rookie party in Dallas and we'd like to extend the road trip by a day?
That was the only day available. I go through the schedule with our captains at the beginning of the year, and our captains and a few other older players. And we go over the schedule, and that was the only time that we could really fit it in anytime. And like our first 50 days of the season, we've only got 7 or 8 practices at most, just because we're playing, we're traveling so much. We've been to the East Coast, what will be our second road trip out to the East Coast, and there's not much time to work those kind of events in. And that was really the only time that was available for us.
Okay, so go back and say that again. 50 days of the schedule, you've only got 7 or 8 practice days in there?
The first 49 days.
Wow.
49 days, 25 games, and 7 or 8 practices. Now, there are morning skates. I'm not including morning skates.
No.
But, 7 or 8 practices, that's all.
There is 2 teams that have already done the rookie party coming through Vegas. And I said, boy, that seems early. And their response was exactly what you just said. There's no time built in the schedule for these team building.
No. And we also have a Father's Day trip that'll be in January, but trying to find a time that we played 2 games on the road that it just made sense. Like we either have these long road trips or just not many options. So practice time after these first 49 days, our schedule gets much better. Like I'm sure it's one of the better ones in the NHL. But I would think the first 49 days we've got probably as worst as anybody.
So you're in survival? Are you in sort of like survival, tread water, try and get through it mode? Is that almost the approach that you have to take?
Well, we're trying to win as many hockey games as possible. We're trying to build our game. It's very difficult to build your game because all you're doing really is talking about your game, not getting to practice it very much. I think practice is an important area, especially when you've got so many new players. Like we've got half our forwards are new this year. And we got 7 new forwards. Our defense core is pretty much the same. But so there's been a lot of adjustments for our team early on.
And a couple of new coaches.
And a couple of new coaches, yes.
So and what kind of learning curve would it be for them?
We've got, I guess Paul McFarland's the main new coach that we have. You know, he's been in the NHL for numerous years for numerous, organizations. He started with Florida, Toronto, Seattle, now here in Edmonton. So I guess it's not new for him. It's just new for him working with a different head coach. So for other coaches, we've got, a skills coach that's new, new goalie coach. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's just about everyone working together and how they're contributing and working off each other and knowing exactly what I like. I think everyone's, I'm very grateful. I think I get a great group who are very hardworking and want to contribute. And, as head coach, just try to sit back and allow them to work to their strengths.
Get into your group in a little more detail, but as a whole, the National Hockey League is really having difficulty finding traction. All 32 teams, with the exception maybe of Colorado. Is there anything that stands out to you as to why that is?
I think a lot, like from our perspective, we see a lot of these teams that are playing really well early in the season, and they've had 5 months to ramp up and get ready for this. Mm-hmm. And it's almost as if it's their playoffs. And, I think that has a little bit to do with it. I know that the Edmonton Oilers have always been, or not always, but typically last few years have got off to slow starts and have kind of worked into finding their game. Every team's different. Teams that are having success, I think there's a lot of parity right now, especially, the salary cap has just gone up. I think there's going to be less parity in 3 or 4 years from now, just because of a lot of teams I don't think are going to be able to spend to the max. And right now, everyone's pretty close to that. So I think right now is probably as close as any time for the competition of teams.
Are you feeling or seeing anything of your hockey club playing late into June for the last 2 years?
It'd be an easy excuse to say, yes, we're worn down. We're not that excited to play these games. It'd be very easy cop out. But I think it's more complicated than that. I think there is a little bit of truth to that. But, you know, I think there's other issues or other things that just we're not playing as good as we should be right now.
How do you... I mean, you look at your record, you're right. The last 3 years, this is actually your best record, I think, in the last three seasons to start a season.
It is.
But I don't recall having seen this many blown leads. What do you see in the blown leads that gives you concern other than the fact that, you know, you're leaving points on the board?
We've, you know, unfortunately, you know, we've had just two on our last road trip, to St. Louis and Dallas, where we had, two goal leads against Dallas and just a lot of just mistakes. One, maybe not being able to put teams away. You know, I think there's been multiple reasons why we haven't closed out games. There's been opportunities. I know New York Islanders, we had a game, I believe it was Detroit after, but there's two games close together when we're on a road trip that we could have closed teams out, the power play. And whether we didn't score that power play goal or we gave up shorthanded goal, I think happened a couple of times. Other times, you know, there's been turnovers, there's been missed assignments, you know, it's not just one thing. So I guess it's just, I think a lot of it, just numerous things, put my finger on it, you know, just maybe attention, staying engaged for a full 60 minutes. Just, we have little lapses and it's costing us.
Didn't realize 7 new forwards. I knew there was a few, but when you put it into perspective of half your forward group, that's extreme. Do you have to handle that any differently than you normally would coming into a season? Do you have to be more patient, factor that into yourself?
Patient, finding out these players. There's a lot of players that don't know. They just came to our organization. Tomaszek being one of them, Howard, Mangiapane, Roslovic, you know, numerous guys that, you know, like I said, know of them a little bit, watching them from other teams, knowing their identity, knowing how, what kind of caliber of NHL player they are. But then you have some rookies who are coming up playing their first NHL game for us and, you know, kind of find out like how good they are, one of them, but also who's going to compliment them or who are they going to compliment? What kind of role are they going to play in? So early on in our season, our first 10, maybe 12 games, we had a lot of line shuffling. The last three or four, it's been very consistent what we've had. So hopefully we've got a good pulse on our team, who our players are, and hopefully we can run a little more consistency and they can build some chemistry.
This won't be the only time you've heard this, but we had Mark Messier on the show on Monday, and he jumped at the opportunity to say he'd love to play Leon and Connor together all the time. I've joked about it over the years that for every coach, putting Connor and Leon together is kind of like a drug. every time you need a fix, you put them together. What's the challenge of putting them together? What's the challenge of separating them?
Well, when they're together, for me, it's a lot easier to run my bench, which sounds ironic, but it's a lot easier running my bench because of the amount of minutes that they each play. And when they're on separate lines, they are 21 to 24 minutes a night. That's kind of what they are. So then you've got two of those guys playing those type of minutes. It doesn't leave much for lines 3 and 4. And also the guys that are playing with them, you know, their regular line mates, they're probably not accustomed or fit to play that many minutes when they're separated. So when they're together, it just makes it much more easier. And also the other guys can play more to their identity. You know, whether it's a checking role or shut down or more physical, it's human nature. Players change how they play when they play with those guys because of you know, how good they are, and they want to get them the puck, and they always want to make the right plays. So it's, you know, there's pros and cons. Our intentions were that they were going to play together at the beginning of the year, build some momentum. We were sure that that was one line that was going to be dominant for us, and then we were going to work everything out from there. And the way we started playing, we didn't get off to the start that we wanted and just didn't feel like it was what it should have been. And we made some changes. So yeah, there's certainly going to be times that we put those two together. You look at around the league, most teams have their best players playing together. Yeah, it's great having a number one centerman and a number two centerman like Leon and Connor. But you look at around the league, all the star players pretty much play with other star players. So having those two makes a lot of sense, having those two play together.
But you even had them, you've had them killing penalties, which when you got there, that was, you actually made a conscious effort not to have them kill penalties.
They did. Yeah. And, you know, we're trying to balance what's best for our team. They have been phenomenal on the penalty kill. Our stats say they, those two are our best penalty killers. And now with them having the extra responsibilities and the extra ice time on killing penalties, you have to weigh in. Our 5-on-5 game isn't as strong because they're killing, they're spending this more time on the ice killing. So that takes away less time that they're playing 5-on-5. You know, special teams are so important. But as a team, we're trying to figure out what's the best balance.
Take a break. We'll come back with more with Chris Knobloch from the Edmonton Oilers on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. When you were in Hartford, you were doing you were helping out the kids teams a little bit, right? You still able to keep tabs on the kids?
On the my Hartford team that I was coaching there?
Yeah.
The minor hockey team you're referring to?
The minor hockey team, yeah.
A little bit. I actually had a player that came to one of our games last year. His family came and I got to see him, and which was great. I was fortunate to coach. I've always been able to help out with my son's hockey team wherever I've been, but just drop in, run an odd practice, and that was about it. But I was actually head coach for a few months. It was during COVID. They were still having games and practices, and our team was not running. So I was able to be a full-time minor hockey coach for about 4 months before we started up, you know, in the new year.
When still dropping in now? You still dropping in nowadays?
My son's done. He's graduated. He's
okay.
Not playing hockey anymore. So my minor hockey coaching days are done. They're finished. But I do have a drop in minor hockey here. It's Rogers sometime in the future. I know I'm running a couple practices, but
cool.
But yeah, no, that's.
Are you going through withdrawal as a parent, hockey parent without a kid in hockey? I know I did.
I miss getting to watch him play hockey, but he's picked up a new sport. He was playing football. He's playing junior football here in Edmonton. Wow. And I got to participate in watching him do that. So it's nice for him to pick up something that he's doing quite well at. And yeah, so I guess I don't miss the being a hockey parent because now I'm a football parent, which is something new for me, and I'm enjoying that.
When did you know you were going to be a coach?
Not until I probably got my first job offer by the Prince Albert Raiders. I didn't really think about it until, you know, my last year playing. I was in France. I got a phone call from a former general manager, Roy Stasiak, asking if I want to be an assistant coach for Lethbridge Hurricanes. I didn't get that job, but it opened up my idea of getting into coaching. And I applied for a job in Prince Albert, and I was fortunate to get that job. That got my foot in the door. And, you know, so many jobs for myself, especially, I think about the opportunities I've got. And a lot of those opportunities I've gotten is because a lot of other people have passed up that job. They just didn't want it. They thought it was a bad situation. The pay was so poor. And me, I guess, didn't know any better. I've been able to get assistant coaching job, head coaching job, and, you know, try to make the most of those opportunities.
Are you the type of coach you thought you would be?
When I started, I thought you just come in and you know some systems, you got some practice drills, and you just go do those things. You know, I learned a lot in my first year working with Peter Anholt that it's not about X's and O's. You know, a little bit of it is. It's not always about your speech before the games. It's a lot about building relationships and doing all those little things. Like, and I think Peter Anholt, and I've said this story before, like when I started coaching, especially in the Western Hockey League, like there's some grueling road trips. And you can only imagine some of those grueling road trips coming to Prince Albert. There was times where we were rolling in at Prince Albert at 4 a.m, it's below 40, and you got to unload the bus and, you know, and the kids are going to school and doing all that stuff. And I'd see Peter under the bus. He'd been coaching in the league for over 20 years, about 20 years. And he's under the bus unloading it and doing just things that, just those little things that other guys respect. And, you know, you're always asking these players to do those little things and be a good team member. And, well, it starts with the guy at top, and you know, my head coach at the time, Prince Albert, was Peter, and he was doing those little things. So those are the things I never considered before I got into coaching, but I learned a lot that first year.
So I'm curious, where did you say you finished your playing career?
I was playing for the Neuilly-sur-Marne Bisons, or Bisons, in France in the Division II, which wasn't very good hockey. And I enjoyed my time there. I would have continued playing hockey in Europe, at a higher level, but, you know, I was married and, you know, what I was making, and it just didn't make sense for us to stay there. So we came back to, Canada, to Saskatchewan, and, you know, got real jobs. So my wife had something lined up. She's a speech pathologist. And then I was a teacher. And, you know, I love teaching. I love working with kids, but I also loved hockey. So it made sense for me to get into coaching.
Were you a phys ed teacher?
I was social studies.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Like grade 7?
I could have taught anywhere from 7 to 12. Yes. So actually, when I was coaching, when I started coaching, whether I was in Prince Albert and then I moved to Kootenay, you know, all my salaries weren't paid very little. And after the season, I would always substitute teach, you know.
Wow. Oh, good for you.
So I would go to classrooms, and I spent a lot of times in middle school. learned that I gotta work on this hockey trade, because that's, I'd rather be a hockey coach than, but I made it sound worse than it was. But well, obviously my passion was hockey, so that's where I wanted to be.
What kind of player were you?
What kind of player was I? I was limited skill. I wanted to play like Joe Thornton, passer, cerebral, that type of player. But I didn't have nearly that kind of skill. So I was misidentified. So I don't know. I try and chip in and contribute. You know, that's the type of player I wanted to be. But, you know, I knew I wasn't that good, so I had to chip in a little more with the physicality and, you know, dropping the gloves once in a while.
But now, that said, you were drafted, right? I mean, you did get drafted by the Islanders, so.
Yeah, drafted by the Islanders, and, you know, I figured out later, you know, I figured out later. I didn't figure out what I needed to do until I was probably 20. I think I traded my 20-year-old year. That second half of the season, I think I was turning it on and was becoming a pretty good player then. I went to the University of Alberta, had a pretty good 5 years there. And, you know, I felt that I was close to maybe getting some pro opportunities, because I had some pretty good years in university, and it just never materialized. And, you know, I just wasn't wasn't good enough. You know, I just wasn't a good enough skater and wasn't enough, just wasn't at that level.
So where does a guy like Rob Dom fit into your career path?
Well, I learned a lot from Rob, and that's one of maybe the first time I ever thought about coaching was I saw him, you know, I had a lot of respect for him. He's a great coach, good mentor. And I also thought he had a pretty good job there at the University where they were just continually running out, winning teams and going to championships. And I saw the way he coached. It was a little bit different than a lot of coaches that I had experience with. Any bad coaches I had, but I probably related more to Rob than I had with other coaches, just because he was more analytical and more about teaching. And, you know, like myself, Rob went to school to the University of Alberta and got an ed degree and got into coaching. So I was kind of went down that same path.
And now Rob will call you up and say, what's it like coaching Connor McDavid? What do you tell him?
I tell him it's pretty amazing. Like there's so many coaches that go through their entire coaching career, and never get to coach somebody like him. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be able to do it twice. Once here and against in the NHL. I've talked to Rob, stay in touch with him and talk to him this summer before our season started. And, I have a lot of respect for him and yeah, he never had the opportunity to coach with Connor McDavid. So I get to share a little bit of insight on what that's like.
So has coaching Connor changed from Erie to Edmonton?
Not necessarily for the player, just because of just who he is. But I guess my coaching a little bit, just because it's two different leagues, you know, junior level is, more about development and.
But do you do any teaching in the NHL still, or do you think you do?
Absolutely. They're still teaching. It's not as much, but these guys also want answers. They want to be better. They want to know why something didn't work, or if they're in a slump, what they can do to get out of it and play better. They want an advantage to score goals more frequently. And as a coach, you have to, you're continually pushing them to do that. And they're receptive, you know, not all players are receptive. I'm fortunate that my two superstars still want to get better. A lot of times players come to the rink and they probably don't put in the best effort, or they're like, we played last night, I'm a little bit tired, I got to get ready for the next day. I don't think I've ever seen Connor or Leon have one of those days. Like they're first to the rink every day. They're on the ice early. They're 100% for every drill, you know, which is amazing because it sets the tempo for the rest of the team.
Do you like the iPads on the bench?
I do not. Because usually the iPads are, I think it's a good tool to see things. Maybe I think it's probably beneficial for special teams to look at something on special teams, because that is a set play. Maybe even face-offs they're doing this, or it's a set play. You look at it and it can help you later in the game. But I think a lot of it used is, I wanted to see my chance that I missed. You know, I could have made that pass on that 2-on-1, or why didn't I score that goal? It's usually looking and just reflecting on what had happened, and it's not going to help any future plays. It's just that they're looking for an answer of why something did work or didn't work.
Who can make you belly laugh on the bench? Or when was the last time you belly laughed on the bench?
I don't know. Probably Leon. Leon's the most emotional on our team. But one
Leon's giving his own teammates shit too, though.
um, It's, I don't know, I'm trying to think. Hyman's got it pretty good. I haven't laughed for a while because we haven't seen Hyman for quite some time. But usually he's got a pretty good, you know, sense of humor, and he's very jovial, and, you know, you like that attitude, and it's contagious. So, but as for the one-liners, you know, probably, you know, when we had Corey Perry, he probably had some good lines that, you know, you'd like to hear. So,
Zach back soon?
Zach, we anticipate being back sometime next week. So okay. We head out on the road. Whether he gets back in the lineup before then, we play tomorrow night against Colorado. He will not be playing in that. But sometime next week, we're anticipating him be back.
I've got to ask you how you manage situations, because right now you have two polarizing players, whether you like it or not, and whether the criticism is fair or not. But Evan Bouchard and Stuart Skinner. And it is something that if you watch the market, the barometer on Bouchard, the barometer on Skinner reflects a lot of attitude of the fan base. How do you manage the criticism that they get, and how do you protect them, and how do you make sure that they know that they are successful parts of this organization?
You know, in this business,
let's face it, they do get a lot of criticism.
They do. Absolutely. They do. And I think a lot of it is unfair, but you know, I learned early, I used it for myself in coaching. And I applied it to the goaltenders that, so often we get way too much, credit when things are going well, way too much credit, but also when things aren't going well, we get way too much criticism. And it's about finding that balance. And there are times when you're playing well and you aren't playing, you're not on top of your game, but it's probably somewhere in the middle. It's never as bad as you think, and it's never as good as you think. And you just kind of have to roll the punches. And, you know, with those guys, hopefully they understand that they're going to have to make their mistakes. And a lot of it's unfair, the criticism, but they are important players to our team. And, you know, especially, you know, you look at Stuart Skinner and what he's accomplished, the amount of playoff games he's won and the way he's played. And yes, he's had off games. He hasn't been his best. But, you know, I think he has done a really good job of balancing that. And Evan too, I don't think it's start of his season's been at his best. You look at his best, and that's probably been the playoffs the last 2 years when it's counted the most. And, you know, we're trying to find that game in him. And, you know, I just think the criticism probably a little off. I don't think it's warranted. And absolutely, they can be better. But I just think they're good players that get more criticism than they deserve.
The thing I've appreciated about you in the National Hockey League more than anything else is the stones to make some really difficult decisions in playoffs with your goaltenders. Who did you lean on for that? And where did the ability to make those tough decisions where a lot of people would have stayed status quo?
I was looking at the history of what happened. You know, probably the biggest, most difficult decision that I had ever made was changing my goaltender in the Vancouver series 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. I believe we're going into game 4, and we went with our backup, Calvin Pickard. And Calvin played 2 games that went really well for us. Played game 4 and game 5. First game, he was a couple minutes away from getting a shutout. Second game, he played really well, and we just didn't win it. And then we went back with our starter, Stu. And then he was great the last 2, and then into the next series in Dallas. But for me, you know, I looked at the previous year, how things didn't go well. I went to, you know, my experience coaching about changing up goalies when I did or didn't do it. And and I took a lot of advice, you know, from my staff. And, you know, that year, Ken Holland was our general manager. You know, talking to the assistant coaches, how do you feel, you know, the past, how does Calvin Pickard come into a game after not playing for 2 weeks, or, you know, because it'd been quite some time. Then you look back, and during the regular season, he went long stretches without playing games and then coming in and playing some of his best hockey. So you see a goaltender that was struggling. You see a guy that can come in no matter how long he'd been, his last start had been. So you just weigh all that and try and make the best decisions. And, you know, hopefully they come in and play their best.
You know, this year, you actually, your numbers actually reflect that the team might be playing better defensively. I think your shots on goal against are down compared to previous years, and your save percentage 5-on-5 is not as bad as people think it is. Some of the numbers, and I'm not a big numbers guy, but some of the numbers reflect that.
Yeah, you sound like a nerd right now.
I know. Well, I'm trying to impress Chris.
you did that a long time ago.
Yeah. some of the numbers are reflecting you're actually playing better defensively this year than you have in a long time. Do you feel that? Is that fair?
No, I don't. And the numbers that we have, it's not. The previous 2 years, I don't think we got nearly enough credit for how good we were defensively. And we defended pretty well. And right now the shots are down. We are giving up fewer shots. But I think the type of chances that we're giving up aren't giving our goalies much opportunity to play well, whether it's giving up chances off the rush, odd man rushes, slot chances, stuff like that. I think we've got a lot of room to grow in that area.
What's on the playlist these days? You big music guy?
Yeah, I love Zach Bryan, Lumineers.
Nice.
Yeah. I was just at a Bryan Adams concert last month, so I've listened to some of that.
He's still got it, doesn't he?
He does. He puts on a great concert. You know, I'm looking forward to Bruce Springsteen. I would like to see that movie because I like his music. So I like the, you know, the kind of the country / folk kind of stuff. A lot of that.
Zach Bryan, age old question, home for a funeral. Like who's the eyes are through that? Like, who are we looking through that? Do you have a theory?
I know. I try and make sense of that all the time. It's
I can't figure it
one
out.
One of my favorite songs. And I give my kids a hard time because I was the first one to enjoy his music. Their favorite, band would be Zach Bryan, and we got tickets when he was here in Edmonton, and we were on the road, so my family got to go to the concert. And I was the one who missed out, even though I was the true first fan.
I love that guy.
Are you reading anything on those long plane trips?
Oh, trying to get my head out of the a computer. Usually some kind of sports psychology book, trying team performance book. I try and get away from it. I like to read just because it's good for my mind, and I like historical fiction, and it's something that, you know, it allows me to get my head out of the game for a little bit, and which I think is really important.
Thanks for doing really this, pal. This has been illuminating and fun. Thanks for bearing with some of our prying questions. And good luck the rest of the way. Can't wait to see you in Vegas.
Thank you very much. Looking forward to it, guys.
Face Off Inside the NHL returns, taking you deeper behind the scenes than ever before. See it all from the star-studded Four Nations Face Off Tournament.
Us against the world, boys.
To the adrenaline of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
I'm scared of you guys.
With candid interviews and backstage access, experience the sacrifice, the rivalries, and the determination that define NHL greatness.
Just when I thought last year couldn't be topped, here we are.
A new season of Face Off Inside the NHL. Watch now only on Prime Video.
A lot of different areas, but that you can go with Chris. But it, like most guys, when you talk about their hobbies, or their faces light up, like Zach Bryan, and he is really popular in our office with a group that we call Positivity Alley. We love our Zach Bryan.
In fact, I the last time I did a road trip with the Oilers, gosh, I think Chris was coaching. Zach Bryan was following us around. He was in Buffalo and in Pittsburgh and Columbus. And I think I do think the coaching staff and some of the players actually got to sneak out to one of the concerts way back when, a couple of years ago. So I'm not a big Zach Bryan guy. So
oh, you aren't?
No, I like. There's lots of guys I like on that.
So
on
here's a funny genre one. Music. Zach was in Vegas, and Zach's a different cat, right? Like he can rub people the wrong way, but he decided he was going to have a house party. He was at a VRBO or an Airbnb or whatever, and he just put it out there that he's having a house party. And all of a sudden, like cars, people everywhere, they shut down the street. They had to cancel the house party. My friend of mine's sister went to the party. When she was in line, she never got in. But the guy just said, I'm having a house party in Vegas. And I was sour. Nobody let me know because I would have showed up.
Yeah, and you wouldn't have got in either.
Well, maybe I would have said, hey, for 100% hockey, slide me in. GM meetings are going to be held after the Hall of Fame induction. Anything hot on the docket?
Well, I think there's going to be discussions about something you and I talked about the other day, and that is knocking the net off its moorings and intended goals. I think that has reared its ugly head. The managers have been pushing out lists of things for the last little while. I think there's going to be a lot more information about the new CBA for them. There'll probably be a couple of rule discussions trying to make the game a little more smooth. People will be bitching about the schedule again. You know that with what's gone on. And
do you think a manager will raise their hand and go, over here, could we get the goalies to serve their own penalties? Do you think that'll happen?
No, I don't think that'll happen. But you know what? It's as I said, if I was one of those 32 guys, I might have put that on my list.
I know I've taken some shots about only putting 7 names in my superstar list, but you should take a couple hits for what you said there.
I wasn't talking about every penalty. I said that already. Wasn't talking about just the minor penalty. It had to be, you know, I would consider the double minors. Like that was a double minor. But if a goaltender got a major penalty, he should have to serve it.
I can just imagine the goalie sitting in the penalty box. It would be one of the greatest scenes of all time.
Oh, now you like the idea.
Well, from a visual perspective, yeah.
Well, that's all that matters.
I've often wondered why, you know how the backup goalie in some buildings, Winnipeg, Montreal, San Jose, has to sit across the ice? There's not room on the bench. Why don't they put the backup goalie in that team's penalty box and let them watch from there?
Well, because it may get overused then.
There's lots of room there. Hall of Fame weekend, always special around Toronto. You'll be involved in, I'm sure, and by few the way, of those gatherings.
I'm going to go Monday. So we'll talk about that on Monday with the show. But and Billy Guerin's crew and Doug Armstrong's crew are going to meet separately to talk about their Olympic rosters. And, you know, they're going to have to whittle down from that number in the high 40s to closer to 25, which is the number that they will take to Italy. So that'll be – and you'll wonder if names will start to leak out after next week, although they have done a good job of keeping it a secret so far.
I just wonder when they start letting guys know whether their play improves, whether we see a spike because the veil is lifted. They know whether they're going or not, and they don't have to worry about every night because it has put some of these very good players, star players, not superstar players, but star players under the spotlight and under some individual pressure.
And some superstars too.
No, my 7 superstars are fine. They're just fine.
Are they already there?
They're already there. They're just fine. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, Ovi's not going, but he's good. Thanks for listening to 100% Hockey. Let us know what you thought of the episode. Please share it and subscribe. And we've got a couple of big things coming for you next week, so you don't want to miss out on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. I'm not just saying that. There's something huge coming next week, so stay tuned.
Really? Yeah. Did you tell me? Really? Wow.
You told me.
Oh.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.